Hey, welcome to the Black Knight Nation podcast. I'm your host, Sal Intradonato. The Black Knight Nation podcast is brought to you by Higher Echelon, a company run by Joe Ross. We appreciate Higher Echelon sponsoring our podcast. Appreciate them re-upping with us to continue doing podcasts like this with our guest, Donnie Horner, the third. First off, we want to plug our stuff. We had Seth Mendelson's been covering the number one ranked Army lacrosse team like a glove. We have the coverage on our website, blacknightnation.com. Check our YouTube channel. We have interviews with Casey Reynolds, the Army wide receiver who scored his first goal of his career yesterday. We have an interview with him. We have an interview with Gunnar Fellows, who had three assists in their win yesterday over Lehigh. I did a story on recruit Elijah Bechdel, second recruit of the 2025 class for Army, committing yesterday on a visit. During his visit. So check out our website, check out our YouTube, check out our socials, give us a follow, subscribe, what have you. And today's going to be really interesting podcast tonight because, you know, we've dived into the history of Army football. We've had guests on who played through the eras of Army football, but never quite have we talked about the 1914 Army football team. And tonight we'll do that with one Donnie Horner III. Thanks, Donnie, for joining us.
I really appreciate the opportunity to be here, Sal. Big fan of your work. Definitely an honor for me to be on Black Knight Nation. You know, kind of grew up West Point and went to the Naval Academy myself and joined the Service Academy family. You know, kind of seeing so many people that have been on your podcast that I've known most of my life is really, really cool. And, you know, just kind of when I think about Army football, I think about my family. I think about the brotherhood that exists with Army football, and I think about the national champions. And for me, that includes the 1914 team, which there's not enough hours in the day. I could talk about the 1914 team forever. So I'm really honored to be on the pod, and thank you so much for having me.
You know, when we talked and had a brief conversation to set up this podcast, we were talking about how maybe, you know, you see along the stadium the three national championships for Army, and you know, maybe this 1914 is missing, right? It should be on it. And I had a conversation with somebody at Army, and there's some talk about it. You know, I'm not saying people talk about it. I'm not sure it comes up in team meetings, you know, Jeff Munkin's team meetings every night day, but you know, there is some talk among putting the 1914 up there for the team champions. So we got a little bit of your background. You know, your dad played football at Army. You're a Navy grad. And like, what, first off, let's get why you were so interested in doing some homework on this 1914 team. What got you interested in that?
It's a great question. It really goes back to my childhood. I really had 100 years of Army football on repeat. It was a film that was put out probably in 1990. Really came out. I think it was NFL Films who produced it, and it was called Field of Honor. And we had it on VHS, and I watched it all the time. And they mention in the film the 1914 team, and we'll get into, you know, all the famous leaders that were molded on that team. And they mentioned that they were undefeated, and that always stuck with me. Because we celebrate the 44 team, the 45 team, the 46 team, and rightfully so, no question about it. But it, for me, it really goes back to Field of Honor and watching 100 years of Army football and learning about it then. Then I had the fortunate opportunity to be stationed. I say we were stationed at West Point when I was 8, 9, 10 years old in the early 90s. And my dad was an Army football mentor. Dad is class of 81, Army football player. And his favorite passion to this day is Army football. And when we were there, when we were stationed at West Point, I was the unofficial ball boy for the team. Like, no joke. I was around practice. I always kind of got the opinion that Coach Sutton liked me. At least he never kicked me out of practice, but I spent a lot of time with the specialists, most notably like Jay Parker. He was a plebe, one of the great kickers in Army history. Patman Malcolm, Todd Hawkins, punter. I hung out with the specialists a lot, but I got to know some of the other guys. And I would, you know, go to all the games, go to so many different practices, and I watched the history of Army football in present day as this unofficial ball boy. And as the years went on, Army rightfully recognized Coach Blake in naming the field after him, Blake Field at Mikey Stadium. And then they added the Ring of Honor to include the Outland Trophy, the Heisman Trophy, and the National Champions. And then we added, you know, Campbell, the Campbell Trophy, the academic Heisman, and rightfully so. And I always just thought that the 1914 team deserved a spot in that Ring of Honor, as I call it, at Mikey. And I went on a little bit of a crusade over the course of the past 15 years to try to make it happen. And I rekindled it this year on count that it's the 110th anniversary of the team. And I thought it was a good time to kind of restart the conversation casually. I'm not here under protest. The amount of respect that I have for, you know, Coach Munkin and Army football history goes without saying. So I'm not here to start a petition, but I would like to have a conversation about the 1914 team and adding it this year in recognition of the 110 year anniversary.
It would be nice to, and you know, doing research on it, all I could do is hit, you know, 1914 Army football team, get the Wikipedia page, and you find out, like, and we talked about this a little bit, the team, the players that were involved in this team, and then you find out what they did after West Point. And it's just like, it's pretty incredible that, you know, not only was this a undefeated football team, and, you know, Donnie, I will go over, like, maybe how they got undefeated maybe later in this podcast. But, I mean, who these people were. And, I mean, it's almost like a who's who sometimes that you're talking about here. And I think the one person I'll recognize off the bat was Robert Nealon, you know, coach of Tennessee, moved on to coach of Tennessee. You know, and the field's still named after him, I believe. Yeah, right. He's a Hall of Fame coach, and he played offensive line.
Nealon Stadium.
Yeah, unbelievable connection there.
Unbelievable.
Yep. Yeah, if I didn't talk to you, I would never have made that connection. You know, so talk about maybe the team itself and how, you know, maybe the who played on there or what they accomplished in that.
Yeah, sure. You know, the 1914 team had an illustrious career on the field, but also off the field. But let's start, you know, on the field first. They go undefeated. The question, I mean, there definitely was some teams sprouting up in the Midwest. Illinois claims the national championship in 1914. And, you know, Texas had a great year in that year as well. But it was really a Northeastern sport with Notre Dame, you know, coming up as this very, very active toddler. And Army ended up beating Notre Dame that year, 1 year after losing 35-13. But you bring up Coach Nealon. Coach Nealon goes on to be this College Football Hall of Famer, but he was also an All-American on the team. And the team had six All-Americans, and they had four Hall of Fame players and two Hall of Fame coaches. What's really interesting about Coach Nealon is that everybody remembers him for his illustrious career at Tennessee, and it was incredible. I think he won four or six national championships, just absolutely dominated the SEC. And to this day, you know, one of the premier, you know, college football programs still honors him, and the stadium is named after Nealon. He's an absolute legend. But there was another player on the team, General James Van Fleet, who also coached in the SEC in and around the same time, a little bit earlier than Coach Nealon, but James Van Fleet coached at Florida. And he is one of very few non-Florida graduates to be given a letter the letter F and is a considered a Gator great and is in their athletics Hall of Fame. And that was James Van Fleet, who was also a flag officer and served in three wars. So that is just absolutely incredible in my mind as well. Nealon, obviously, it goes without saying, but then there's also James Van Fleet, and the list goes on and on. You know, you had Ali Oliphant, who played in the NFL. He was an All-American on the 14 team after transferring from Purdue. He was a no-nonsense, little cantankerous fella and had this incredible career. And then, Coach Dudley Daly, he was the person that started the College Football Coaches Association, which we still have today. And a former Army coach is the immediate past president of the organization, Todd Berry. So it's amazing the roots that sprouted with the 1914 team from the banks of the Hudson and the Plain all the way to Gainesville in the swamp and then over on the river in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yeah. Guys, if you're watching right now, we have probably a record high viewers for this podcast. If you're watching now, you have any comments or questions for Donnie and I, probably questions for Donnie, comments for me, please send them our way. Maybe you could help me out here, Donnie, with the team.
Sure.
Because, you know, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page here. I say Omar Bradley as a member of the team. He was a member of this team too, right?
He was a member of the team and also was named by President Truman as the finest Army officer that he had ever come in touch with. General Bradley, one of the five-star generals. What's really remarkable is that this team had over 40 players on it that earned the rank of Brigadier General or higher. 40. Hmm. And in my mind, they win the national championship. Then they win two world championships in World War I and World War II. And they also win Korea. Hmm. So you take that and you say, okay, that's amazing. But let's peel back the onion a little bit on, Omar Bradley. This guy wasn't just the chairman of the Joint Chiefs under President Truman. He was chairman of the Joint Chiefs under President Eisenhower, who was also his teammate at West Point. The Army football film Field of Honor described President Eisenhower as an undersized halfback. And if it wasn't for a knee injury, he would have been on this team too. So, I mean, it's really interesting to think about this, that President Eisenhower had the chairman of the Joint Chiefs was his teammate, and they were on the same team. And we're talking all about, these players, but if you go back on the macro level, Sal, the class of 1915 is the class the Stars fell on at West Point. And that's because 40% of the class went on to serve at the flag level. And they went on to be general officers. Hmm. And that, to me, is almost mind-boggling. Being a history, a history aficionado and as just a hobby, and I'm just a fan, I don't pretend to be an Army football alum. I don't pretend to be a Navy football alum. But as a Service Academy grad and as a person that really appreciates history, it's important to recognize the impact that the class of 1915 had on the country. And there's really two classes, in my opinion, in Service Academy history that made the most impact. And that's the class of 1958 at Navy and the class of 1915 at Army. When you see those two classes in and amongst this sea of just incredible honor and valor and recipients of the Medal of Honor, you have to wonder what was going on in Annapolis and West Point during those years. I mean, you look at all of the general officers on that 1914 team. They're platoon commanders. They're in the trenches of World War I. And who were they learning from? They were learning from the class of 1895, who was considered the first class the stars fell on. So they're being groomed by the class the stars fell on in 1895 in the trenches of World War One, and they took everything they learned from the gridiron and that famous field of friendly strife, and then they applied it in World War II and saved the world. And very similarly at Navy, who was the class of 1958 learning from? The World War II and the Greatest Generation. They were the big brothers, the big sisters, all of those. It's just absolutely amazing to me, those classes.
I was thinking about a previous podcast that we had with Pete Dawkins, and I could have sworn
I got his picture right behind me. There he is, right behind me.
I could have sworn he talked about being in a mess hall or something, and one of the elites of the elite showing up, and it might have been Eisenhower. I could be wrong, but if that's the case, there you're talking about, you know, passing it along, or, you know, so to speak, right, to a point where now, you know, Pete Dawkins is a cadet. He's meeting a high-ranking officer or a former Army football player, and Pete Dawkins ends up having a pretty – we know about what Pete Dawkins did on the field. We know about Pete Dawkins as his military, right? And we also know about what he's done after West Point, and he's a living legend, right, at 86 years old. He just celebrated his 80s. So I look at – you're right. You look at – you're connecting 1985 with the 1915 class to you know, and that knowledge is spread down through West Point classes, right? And you talk about – this brotherhood at West Point that they still talk, you know, that they have here now. And I'm sure it's happening now where a guy, a recent grad, maybe in the last couple of years, is going out and serving, and maybe his commanding officer has some former football ties, or at least some West Point ties that he's kind of, you know, maybe working under, so to speak. But you talk about this 15 team. I mean, holy cow. Do you know how many players were on the roster for the 15 team? An idea. 60. So 40 60. Of the 60, 40 of the 60 were generals.
Were generals or higher, or brigadier generals or higher. Just absolutely mind-boggling. And you bring up General Dawkins. General Dawkins is one of my heroes. Outside of my family, my two heroes are President Kennedy and General Pete Dawkins. And I hold him in such high regard, Sal, that I have his picture that he signed for me. It was taken in Arvin back in 2014. And I asked him to sign it. His late wife, Judy, took that picture. And we had a wonderful exchange. I had the incredible opportunity to meet him. I wrote him a letter, basically told him that I've never seen a better cadet, midshipman, airman, seaman, soldier than Pete Dawkins. He is a living legend, as you described. And when I was a midshipman, I always kept before me the constant thought, you know, what would Dad do? What would Joe Ross do? Joe Ross would tell me to buckle down, you know.
Dad would tell me
it's a rite of passage. General Dawkins would tell me to make the most of every single opportunity, because that's what he did. Class president, captain of the hockey team, you know, Heisman Trophy winner, Rhodes Scholar. I've never seen anything like it. We'll probably never see anything like it again. And he signed this portrait without any plugging. Donnie, God bless USNA, 364 days a year, Pete Dawkins. And I was like, that is just absolutely amazing. So I framed it, and it's sitting up there right underneath a little portrait of my daughter.
It's just like, you think of the people who have passed through the academy, and, you know, we tend on this podcast to focus a little bit more toward the football players and stuff. But then you think of, like, the guys like Eisenhower, men like Eisenhower, Bradley, and guys who people that went on to serve, I think of Nate Sassaman maybe, and people like
Great podcast, by the way. Awesome podcast.
And now guys who are out there currently who are maybe in line to do bigger and better things, like a Pat Work. I mean, this is it's a special place. And you wonder, like, back then, right? Of course, because this is not – like you said, it's mostly – in 1914. It's mostly Eastern football, right?
It is. No, Ivy are leagues.
There polls? Are there polls back then? No, there are no polls back then, are there?
There's no polls back then, but what's really interesting is that, you know, it's widely held that the modern era of college football begins somewhere in the mid-30s. And some sort of consensus around the fact that the first Heisman Trophy is awarded in 1935, and that's a good place to start. And what's really interesting is that we're talking Army football history. Monk Meyer finished second in the Heisman Trophy winning Heisman Trophy voting of 1935, and he probably should have won it, in my opinion. But he was a great player at Army. But in my opinion, the early days of college football did have consensus. I think it's a little bit misunderstood because we don't have polls and we can't point to this poll or that poll. But the consensus really was the National Championship Foundation, Park Davis, who was a statistician well ahead of his time, and Halgate. Those were the three. And you go back all the way through history, and ESPN Sports Century did a fantastic job of commemorating national champions going back, I think, to the 1880s. And that's who they used. And Army in 1914 was co-national champion in Davis, which was really replaced after he passed away in the 30s by the coaches poll, formerly UPI. Mm-hmm. And, you know, You get Halgate, National Championship Foundation, and Davis, all for Army. And then you also had Helms, which was sprouting up too. Basically, you had these individuals who were noted for their credibility, and then these foundations, which were a group of committees of, you know, folks that were like-minded and understood college football, and they voted. And of the major polls of the day, not polls, of the major, you know, championship awarding bodies, Army had four of them in 1914. And there was only three that even had a champion. And it was Texas, Illinois, and Army. Texas had one, Illinois had one, Army had four. And that for me is reason enough to honor them. But more than that, going back to what we're talking about, the missions of the service academies is about so much more than football. You know, I think the famous quote, upon the fields of friendly strife are sown the seeds that upon other fields on other days will bear the fruits of victory, is absolutely true. Without question, you learn by playing intercollegiate athletics and intramural athletics, and every cadet, every midshipman is an athlete. And that's part of the physical mission. And these folks absolutely dominated the physical mission. And then they dominated the honor part. Then they dominated the country part. And then they dominated the duty part. So they dominate on the field, and then they dominate duty, honor, country, not once, not twice, but three times on that unfriendly field of strife. And they dominate that too. So that to me is just so special. The leaders on that team changed the course of not just American history, but college football history. The roots of Florida Gator football are with General James Van Fleet. The roots of Tennessee football are with Coach Nealon, and the College Football Coaches Association that we have today really owe a big thanks to Coach Daly.
Yeah. You know?
It's really just
amazing. Yeah, I'm looking up John McEwen too. He coached at Oregon too. He was an All-American center that coached at Oregon for a bunch of time and coached the Brooklyn Dodgers, but not the Dodgers baseball team, the football team. So I mean, it's crazy, just the list of players, the list of their accomplishments, like we talked about. And you know what? I'm going to bring this up, and you can comment on it or not if you like. But I think in the news this week, there was something about the West Point mission statement moving away from duty on our country. And now we're having this podcast talking about how important the duty on our country was to it. Because, you know, West Point still kind of at this point, maybe I'm wrong here. I'm not a history buff. But in 1914, there's, the academy is still kind of being established, so to speak. Correct. I mean, it's still, you know, it's been around, but, you know, what, probably 20 years or so or that. And, you know, that was big. The duty on our country was big. And now they say the maybe it's not going to be part of the mission statement anymore. I don't know if you have any thoughts on it. I saw it cross the news, you know, on social media this week. And I'm wondering, you know, I don't know. That's our on our Black Knight Nation, our profiles. It's duty on our country. We have it on ours. You know, maybe we're kind of stealing a little bit. But yeah, what are your thoughts on it?
You know, you look at it, West Point was founded in 1802. So when the 1914 team rolls, it's all right. You know, when 1914 rolls around, it's over a century old. It's about a century old, but it's still grappling with the Industrial Revolution. It's still grappling with the transition from cavalries that had horses, you know, and bayonets, and they still had those, and the wagon trains and the caissons go rolling along to, okay, what is this trench warfare about? It was an army, it was a service academy that was definitely in transition. And they transitioned so quickly and so effectively that we have to tip our cap to them. They did it with extreme precision, and we were able to, you know, operationalize an army in transition on the beachheads or on the trenches of World War One, and then the beachheads of World War Two. In terms of the mission, I have such faith and confidence in the leadership at West Point. I'm sure everything they do has a reason. And I have not read the new mission statement, and I don't know the old one. But I think the duty, honor, country will always stay a motto. I certainly didn't bring up the motto in terms of you know, my own personal feelings about the new mission or what have you. And I don't mean to be noncommittal on that, but I believe that there was a reason for it, and I'd like to see, you know, kind of how it plays out before I officially comment on the record or something like that. But I have confidence in them, and I think duty, honor, country will always have a place, the same way honor, courage, commitment will always have a place at Navy, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. It's just something I just came, you know, thought of that it came up in the news. And you know, I'm thinking of when the football program started, not when West Point was established. You know, the football program was still in its early stages in 1914. But I mean, when you have an undefeated season like that, and when you beat, you know, Notre Dame and you beat Navy, who I'm guessing, like you said, Notre Dame's trying to get going there.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, those are the two teams where, you know, as far as schedules going for that 1914 team, I saw they played like Springfield Tech or something like that. Springfield, but that's what the schedules were like back then.
Yeah, the right? YMCA team. Yeah, YMCA was on it. I got it pulled. Springfield YMCA.
Yeah.
Yeah. Springfield YMCA. You know, from my understanding, they were a pretty good team at the time.
Was that like just a bunch of local guys What do we think the Springfield YMCA?
I don't know too much about the Springfield. I think it was actually probably more organized than we would give it credit, you know, to today. I don't think the village people were lining up in 1914 for the Springfield YMCA, but I think it was just different at the time. And they played a competitive game. I mean, they lost to Army 13-6 when they got destroyed by Army 41-0. So, hey, Springfield YMCA gave them all they could handle. And the thing about the 14 team was, you see a lot of, you see like a lot of teams that have this great offense or this great defense, and it carries them to national championships. You know, a great example in the NFL is the 2000 Baltimore Ravens. I mean, I don't think anybody could score against the Baltimore Ravens in 2000, the Steel Curtain of the 70s, just these amazing defenses.
Yeah.
Army had an incredible offense. Yeah. They're putting up 40 points against Villanova, you know, in 1914, but they didn't give up more than a touchdown the whole season. The whole season, they didn't give up more than a touchdown on defense. I mean, it was just absolutely mind-boggling, you know?
They gave up 20 points all season.
And Navy had an older football program, you know? Navy had an older football program than Army, you know? Navy famously challenged, you know, the cadets and Dennis Mikey to a game, you know, that was held on the plane in 1890. Yeah. And, you know, that was the start of Army football, but they blanked Navy 20-0. And Navy was a very reputable program in the teens. And while we're talking, you know, we're talking about the schedule, let's talk about Notre Dame just for a second in terms of the context of the national championships. Notre Dame, you know, in terms of college football tradition, you have to put them on the Mount Rushmore of history and tradition. And they claim national championships before 1935. So they claim national championships prior to the modern era. And so does Navy. Navy claims 1926. So when you look at teams with that kind of a history, I think it gives more credibility and makes the 1914 Army team all that more relatable to their claim as a national champion, you know?
Yeah. Just real quick, and then I want to ask you a couple more questions on the quest to try to get it up at Mikey Stadium. So that team, six game, they played 9 games. They had 6 shutouts. Only 3 teams scored against them. They only gave up, I'm guessing 3 touchdowns all season long. So, I mean, it was, you're right. The defense was probably ahead of the game. The offense could put up points with the talent that they had on the field.
Yeah.
And incredible, like just looking straight. If you're a stats guy, you look at a team giving up 20 points the whole season. And that's not even the Saban Alabama teams. Like, granted, the schedules are different and there's more games being played, but that's
right.
If I do the math, I mean, it's less than 3 points a game they were giving up or something crazy like that. You know, I mean, just ridiculous. You know, I think about what you're talking about with like Navy claiming a national championship before you know the Heisman and Notre Dame also doing that, and you think about. Yeah. Like this 1914 team, and you think about like one of the Army teams in the 40s where Oklahoma State was claiming a title over Army, right? And they doesn't Oklahoma State have national champions on their stadium in my 40 my history's off 45, I want to say. I could be wrong. But yeah. I mean,
yeah, I think look at, like, I think that's accurate. Yep. And you look at, like, I think it's also, like, yeah, you look at those teams. I don't think I've seen 2 games at UCF, University of Central Florida. I saw them play Stanford and I saw them play Navy. And they have the 2017 team listed as national champions on their press box. And from my research, the UCF team was not named a national champion in terms of any poll or any organization that I could find. No. So I don't think it's this is a different situation than UCF. I can't comment on whether or not there was a poll or there was an organization that, you know, gave Oklahoma the national championship in 1945 or not, but if they are claiming it and they didn't have it, I think this is a different situation for the 14 team because they have the credibility of the Howgate, the Helms, the Championship Foundation, and the Davis. you know, it opens up the can of worms. You know, is UCF right or wrong? I'm not the judge or jury. They did go undefeated. It's there. But the consensus around the time is that it was the bowl championship series and then the college football playoff. And they were not included. And that's a difficult verdict to render that they're national champions when they weren't. This team, the 1914 team, they were by so many credible people. And like I said kind of earlier, Sal, I told my dad when I was prepping for this podcast, I don't want to get an email from Coach Munkin that says, Donnie, you know, you're the gnat that I'm just trying to fly away, you know, like bat away on this 1914 team. Here you are again talking to me about this. I don't do it, you know, under protest. I just think there's when people learn so much about this organization that was the 1914 team, they're worthy. And I'd love to see it up, especially in their 110-year anniversary, you know.
Yeah, and you look at what will it take, you know, to get hopefully maybe people at Army or will listen to this podcast, listen to the case, and maybe Mike Buddy will take an ear or, you know, and maybe it can happen. We know that the stadium's going to go through some renovation coming up, right? You know, we hear in mid-April they're going to start tearing down those East stands. So we're, you know, but that doesn't mean that still this the team cannot get recognized, the 14 team. I believe the recognition's on the other side of the stadium anyway, of course. So we'll see. You know, we'll see. We hope that this this podcast can get the word out a little bit. If anything, you learn a lot about the history of the Army football program going back 110 years. You know, you learn a lot about that stuff that I didn't know coming into here, just researching for 5 minutes before the podcast, you know. Is there anything that maybe you didn't share with that we haven't talked about that you'd like to get out about that 14 team that we didn't talk about?
Not necessarily specific about the team, but specific about returning to one's alma mater. You know, we have such a, I think this isn't just for Service Academy grads, but for, you know, human nature. You always want to have a place that you call home. You know, you want to go to a place that's maintaining, you know, staying up with the times and staying current with the times, but not so unfamiliar that you don't recognize the place, that you're a stranger in a foreign land. And service academies, I think overall, are they perfect? Of course not. No institution is. But for the most part, service academies do an incredible job of welcoming back alumni and honoring the past in a way that if I step foot on, you know, West Point's campus, it's pretty similar to when I was a ball boy in 1992. And when I go back as an alum to the yard in Annapolis, they're still wearing winter working blues and they're still wearing SDVs. And I know all the midshipmen are going to be in Bancroft and it looks familiar. For athletes, I want them, living or deceased, to always have a place in which they're recognized. And back in 1914, this team was the toast of the town. They were considered national champions. The Corps was proud of them. The Army was proud of them. And I want them to have that same place in history at Mikey, one of the most revered places to play any form of sport in the world. And I think they have a rightful place there. There's a great article on Doc Blanchard and Glenn Davis, written in 1988 from Sports Illustrated, you can Google it, that I have to return to every year. And the ending of the article, basically in summary, says this was their place at a time, speaking of Doc Blanchard and Glenn Davis. This was their place, but they will always have a place at Mikey Stadium, on the plane, at West Point. And the truth of the matter is they always will. And they're also in the stadium. Did we have a Heisman Trophy winner on this team? No. But we did have six All-Americans. we did have six college football Hall of Famers. We have a team at Tennessee that has the name, one of the players' names on the stadium. Let's put that 1914 team up there, you know? And how cool would it be to have some, you know, I don't know, some descendants of some of these players come back to Mikey and see them unveil 1914 right next to 44, 45, 46, you know? I think that would be amazing. So that's kind of the last thing I'd like to say about that, you know, specific team. Like, they always have a place at West Point, and they have a special place. And I'd like to be able to see that visual artifact that they're remembered. Kind of corny, but I believe it in my heart. You know?
My thoughts are, like, when I always write about Army Navy, or just like say Army playing Notre Dame, I say, you know, two of the most storied programs, right? Deep in history, right? And I don't know how the youth artists or the youth or the younger people are this at this point in time, but I'm always good for some history and good looking, like finding out some new things. And if you put up 1914 on the stadium and a dad is taking one of his kids to the game and he sees national champions, and maybe that sparks some conversation with, you know, looking that up now where you can freely look it up on your phone, or like, you know, searching it up and stuff and finding a little bit more, like, look at who was on this team. Look at, you know, who were the pretty famous military, you know, soldiers, leaders, commanders coming from this team. Big people in college football history that, you know, you don't know about. I think that sometimes we get a little bit lost in the current and not looking back into the past. And this is going way back into the past. I will say that, which I think is really great. And to have you on here to just educate me and our viewers and people who might listen to this on the audio platforms. I mean, I think it's really great. Really appreciate you having you on tonight. Is there anything maybe you like to say about the current? Because I'm sure you follow Service Academy football, right, pretty closely. I'm sure. Is there anything you like to say about the current status of Service Academy football and where it's at? And I know that, you know, probably 364 days a year, you probably pulling for Army, I'm guessing.
Oh, no doubt about it. You know, in my immediate household, we're Navy in Florida. My wife's a double Gator undergrad and dental school, and I'm Navy. And my Army football family, the folks that know me, they would lose respect for me if I didn't root for my alma mater. And they totally get it. I don't do it with any malice in my heart. I'm not that kind of person that has the passion manifest from the rivalry in terms of, oh, I just can't stand them, I'm not going to talk to an Army grad. And I totally get when that passion does manifest itself in others. And I totally don't judge it. Like, hey, I get it. You know, I'll probably get a text from a buddy being like, hey, you're on Black Knight Nation, what's up? You know, but those that actually, you know me, they know that I have such respect for Army football and such respect for Navy. And I'm like the self-proclaimed biggest Navy sports fan there is. So I feel like my bona fides are fine. But in terms of Army, I root for them 364 days a year. I really do. There are no two schools in America, maybe the world, that are more similar. And I would have never ended up at the Naval Academy if it wasn't for Coach Riley at West Point, who's still the hockey coach. You know, I wouldn't have ended up at a Service Academy without the support of, you know, Army football players and Army football alumni. My sponsor dad in Annapolis is the cousin of Mike Makovic, who's class of 95 Army football player. And I just have such fond memories of growing up Army football that it's impossible for me to root against them except for that one day a year. But when we get together, you know, I went to Army Navy with Joe Ross this year. I'll see him before the game. and I'm in my Navy gear and he's in his West Point gear, and it's awesome. And then, you know, we watch the games on our separate sides. That to me is so special. There's nothing more special than that. And I'm sure I've missed a year here and there, but I can't remember not texting, you know, Trent Steelman on Army Navy Day. You know, I consider Trent a really good friend. I remember not texting Rick Roper. You know, Roper was the man in the early 90s at quarterback. I text them, you know, we're pretty close. I text all those guys. And, you know, the banter back and forth is kind of what I live for. But in terms of the modern day service academy, you know, landscape, I think it's a much brighter future than what a lot of folks might think. I think the general way of thinking is that NIL is really going to hurt us. The no cut blocking is really going to hurt us. And you can't run the triple if you have NIL in the equation and you have cut blocking taken out of the equation. And I don't necessarily buy into that belief. I'm a triple option fan. I'm a triple option, you know, proponent for service academies. I think it equalizes the playing field. And I'd like to see Coach Monken and Newberry run a pure triple. I also say that, Sal, like, I'm never going to pick up the phone and call Coach Monken and tell him what to run. And I'm never going to call, you know, one of the coaches at Navy. He really is like a brother to me. He's wide receivers coach. I never, never say, hey, I think you should run this. But, you know, my opinion is like, hey, I think our bread and butter is the triple option. I think there are teams in our conference, Army's conference and Navy's conference now, that we can beat. And I look at it like, beat Air Force, okay? Win five other games, and you're going to a bowl game every year. And those are kind of the expectations. Army-Navy is always going to be neck and neck. I mean, it's like a flip of the coin right now. But I think the future of Service Academy football is bright. I think we have good coaches on staff at all three service academies. And I think you're always going to get, and I'll stick on the Army side of the equation, of people that I actually know. You're always going to get the studs like Jeff Bacon, Andrew King, Trent Steelman. You're going to get that person that is committed to a life of service, that is going to West Point for the right reasons. And oh, by the way, is a really good football player. If I have any criticism of anything, it's that people sometimes forget in the national media who don't follow Service Academy athletics the way you and I do, that they forget that we are really good athletes too. And we are really good football players and we're really good baseball players. And I think you're always going to have a high school kid that wants to play at a Service Academy. But I am on the record saying this. I am not a fan of being in the American Athletic Conference. I support that we're in it. I don't throw any stones, but I like being independent for Service Academy athletics.
Yeah, I thought maybe – I know the college football landscape is changing. You know, who knows? These super conferences are certainly on the way up, and – you know, I thought it might have been a little bit too early to join right immediately for Army. And now you look at what Army has this year, right, with their first, American Athletic Conference schedule. And people are saying, hey, they did Army a favor. Army might be able to go undefeated in the conference and stuff. I'm like, let's pull the brakes a little bit. Let's see how that first game works out in conference. And I don't like when people bring up the Conference USA, you know, how it didn't work out.
Comparison.
Failure.
Yeah,
and you can't. This college football's changed so much. I mean, that's, what, 25 years ago when the Army joined that Conference USA. And I got to wait and see approach, so to speak, right? I got to wait and see approach, so to speak. But at least the one good positive is you're not going to be playing two FCS schools a year anymore. You're not going to be losing that one game that, you know, if you fall behind a little bit in the schedule, you feel like you got to make up real quick, you know, to try to get, because I mean, yeah, right. The goal for service academies, you know, you want to win that CIC trophy, right? That's probably high on number one on the list. You want to give your kids the opportunity to compete.
Yep.
Yeah. Number one CIC. Give your kids an opportunity to compete in the postseason, right? Give your kids an opportunity to have a winning season. And now we'll see. We'll see how that works out. As far as the offense and stuff, didn't work out too much for Army when they went to that shotgun last year. That's all I'll say. We've had so many conversations on this podcast about the failure to move the ball, big plays, score, and it just wasn't there. So let's see if they could play a little bit more physical football, right? Not saying they weren't physical last year, but more physical football. Let's see those B-backs, you know, again, and let's see some – you're going to need those chunk plays, and they certainly have the athletes to do it. Now it's let's see if they can get that system together. I saw a practice earlier this spring, and it's still a work in progress, I'll say. I'll leave it at that. It's still a work in progress.
Sure.
You can't – because you have a lot of new players in spring practice, right? You have – these freshmen, half the roster is freshmen or maybe more because they bring in such huge freshman classes. So now this is their first spring practice. And they're being, even though some of these guys went to prep, right? Some of these guys are direct admits who this is the first time they might be running a triple option at the college level or a form of that. Yeah. So it's going to take some time. It wasn't going to be like a transition. Coastal Carolina game worked out great for them, right? Because they had experienced guys doing a lot of damage in Tyson Riley and the like who ran the triple option.
That was a great win. Great win.
Yeah, 1,000 times in practice he ran the triple option. They put him from H-back to fullback, bam, 100-yard game. Definitely established a different mentality there for the game. We'll see what happens. Looking forward to it. It's only March. You know, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but I just want to get your take on it. I'm so glad we did. And man, such great conversation with the 1914 team, bringing it to modern day Service Academy football here tonight. Donnie, this is our biggest viewership ever live. We have over 220 people watching right now. So really appreciate it.
I really appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a topic. This is a topic that brought people in. This is a topic, you know, maybe we're getting some viewers from the Navy side too, on your side too, you know, a little bit.
Sure. So, yeah.
I really appreciate it. Guys, if you're watching, check our YouTube channel, check our website. You could certainly, maybe we can even get Donnie back on when it comes a little bit closer to the season and maybe do the little Service Academy preview kind of stuff. You know, maybe
I'd love
maybe,
that.
Let's just keep it Army Navy. I don't know if we really need to go to Air Force, but we'll see what happens with that, you know. But we'll keep it real. And thanks so much, Donnie, for being on. And guys, thanks so much for watching tonight. We really appreciate it. And have a great night. And check out our website and our podcast and our YouTube channel. And we'll be back soon with another great podcast like this one. Thanks, Donnie.
Absolutely appreciate it, Sal. Thank you.